this EP? Shit. I don't know, man. But I do know this shit slaps. Yo.
Welcome, welcome everybody. This is your man, Sharon Smith, and welcome back to Iambic Podcast, where we interview poets, performers, and artists of the Sacramento area. Right now, I got here a hip-hop artist, spoken word artist. You know what? You're more than just a spoken word artist, and he's a leader's guy. This guy has gone to depths of what they should be doing now in trap and hip-hop and in communities and everything. I'd like to give thanks, or I'd like to give you a shout-out or a what's up. Say what's up to Paul Willis!
Hey, snaps! Hey. Right? Is that like the poet thing?
Really? Really, you're going to say the poet thing?
Nah, man. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I am really looking forward to this conversation, because okay, you caught me in the busy season.
That's a good point.
Yeah, man. No, it's amazing. It's amazing. There's a lot of cool stuff.
Well, it's definitely. But no, I mean, going even with me and stuff, I mean, we both have a little connection and stuff, relationship. And even when I moved out here, you know, you're one of the few people I met that you got work. You yeah, got work.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I looked up, you know, 8 LPs, 1 mixtape, 1 EP, 2 singles on it. I mean, I don't even think your Bandcamp has everything you've done.
No. It doesn't. Is that bad? I don't know. Man, no, it's funny. I went through the other day, because my new thing now, right, mm-hmm, is as I'm working on these last kind of couple of albums, but particularly this last one, I'm going back and I'm looking across the entire discography.
Right.
And I'm like, man, there's been so much. And then there's all of the stuff that's been unreleased.
That's what I'm thinking.
And all of the stuff that I've featured on for okay, other folks.
Yeah.
And there's like 50 plus tracks of other stuff.
Right.
That like people just haven't heard yet, or have been on other people's projects. And that, I'm just like, man, it didn't click to me right away that there's at least another like 3 or 4 albums of that stuff.
Damn.
You know what I mean? That could be released at some point, but as like a compilation or whatever, right? But I'm excited to kind of transition and move into this next space. But before we get into, you know, building a business and around diversity, equity, right, and inclusion, I want to make sure that we close out this like hip hop chapter the right way.
So wait a minute. I saw when I was looking back in your Bandcamp and stuff, and I was looking at Downtown Crossing, it was saying this is 1 of 5 albums
for last year. Yeah.
So you have 4 more albums, or 2-3 more albums.
This so new one. The 3 albums out of the 5 got done in 2019.
Okay.
The writing on my part for the other 2 albums got done, but it's a timing thing, and it's okay, a collaboration thing, right? Money also like plays an important role in some of that.
Right.
But it's hard. So I think about Coast to Coast 2, for instance, right?
Okay.
That's a collaborative project between me and my homie Lewis.
Lewis, yeah.
And he's amazing, right?
Right.
Sent him all my vocals and all the features from Sacramento, I don't know, probably in the summer of last year. But it's a process, right? To kind of get things done. You know, he like wasn't there were like pieces of feedback that he had for me. So we went through the process of like kind of going back and forth.
Right.
I had to clean up some vocals on my end and have additional studio sessions to, you know, try some new ideas that he had. And that's just the process of like collaborating across the country.
Right.
When you're not in the same space, you can't like share that energy. But we, you know, kind of have this shared vision, and it's about execution.
There you go.
And making sure that it's done well. And I know that for a while he was just not happy with the writing and then the recording process on his end.
Oh, okay.
He wanted to make sure that it was like up to par. So he's been like working with other folks, and okay. that's been a learning process because he normally just records himself.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? And that's super dope how he does that. But the process of learning other engineers when you are one, you know what I mean? It's like a super like critical, like you're getting into stuff around like frequencies and arrangements and all this stuff. So he's been like handling, I think, like the bulk of that particular project. So I've really just turned my attention to Wonderland.
Okay.
Which is, you know, the final album of those five. And it's being produced entirely by the Bap Notes.
Okay.
And you know, if I had my way and I could wave a magic wand, the album would be paid for, it done, and all that right. next week. I've recorded a bunch of vocals that I'm pretty happy with. It's time to get all the features in. Right. But the key component for that project is ownership.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean?
Okay.
When you have a band of people who come together to create the music, I know on the music industry side, that when you look at split sheets and all this stuff,
right.
trying to divide it up amongst like 9-10 people,
yeah,
that's a lot to do
yeah.
on that end. And even if those 9 or 10 people kind of fall under like this one kind of organizational umbrella of the Bap Notes, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Right.
And they do business as the Bap Notes, that's cool. But for me, it's just important that I own all the music and own all the rights and own those rights exclusively so that when I'm selling or when I decide, because what my strategy has been is I want the albums to pay for themselves.
Right, publishing.
So, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And once they pay for themselves, I want to give it out for free.
Oh.
Because for me, it's about reach. And as long as I make back my investment, then I'm cool.
Right.
And whether I make it back through like physical sales or doing shows, like I'm good with that.
Right.
Everybody else, that's not like how they move.
No, they work, yeah.
But for me, you know, it's like, well, this is my library. This is my like catalog of music. And this is what I choose to do with it because the message has always been the most important thing.
Right.
And I want the message to reach the people who I'm interacting with and engaging with, whether it's in communities or on school sites and the whole nine. So for me, it's just really important that I own all of that so I can then do that stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then there are some cool things that happen along the way. You know, this year I'm being asked to score a movie.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, you know what I mean? Like, that's insane. Like, yeah. I'm not an engineer. I don't compose music.
Doesn't come that way.
But, you know, having this many songs in the catalog and then having relationships with artists all over the country, you know, at this point is a really cool opportunity to kind of build some of that stuff. But if I have to ask permission to use my own music,
okay.
you know what I mean? Yeah. Then like those kinds of opportunities,
right.
I have to limit what I can or can't do for some of that stuff.
Well, That's one of the big things that rappers are now, unfortunately, are now falling victim to is publishing rights, where basically, or even masters, getting their masters back. And that's one of the biggest things, and you, like what P. Diddy right now is having with Mace, basically that $2 million getting his publishing rights and stuff. And also even with other artists and stuff, getting their publishing rights has been it's been one of those things that, you know, they didn't know anything about when they first were doing it, but now it's like, oh yeah, you're 20 years in, yeah, you don't get no money for that.
Yeah, and like here's the thing, it's like I get it, I know,
yeah,
and so when I negotiate with people up front, it's like, look, like I'm gonna pay you something that is respectful of your time and your right. energy. I'm not a major label, so like, if I could like roll out this checkbook, a couple extra zeros right. on top, I would love to do that. But that's not how this works when you're an independent artist.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, we negotiate, we find a price point that makes sense, that's, you know, kind of meets people where they're at. And when they're comfortable with that, then we can kind of take the next steps and go forward. And with the Bap Notes, you know, how the money's breaking down on that last project. It's a $3,000 project.
Okay.
Which ain't Like, well, I don't know if I can swear or not, but like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That ain't shit for an album.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. You know, but when you're independent, that's a significant amount.
It is,
you know
what I mean? Yeah.
Like, that's not like, yo, I can work a single week and then put that aside and not be broke. You know what I mean? That's like a, yo, you gotta put some money away
and put some work.
You know what I mean? And then get it done. And it's crazy because I had just taken a job last summer, or at the start of last summer, and I ended up leaving it after 3 months. And part of the impact of leaving, there's a few things, right? I was ready to kind of begin my business, right? And I knew that I couldn't work for somebody else and then pursue what I wanted to do truthfully. But then there's this other side of like, okay, well, then where does money come from? Right? So
smart.
Like, how do you keep this inflow of cash and how does that keep coming in while you're also then creating opportunities and building something that's like really long-term and self-sustaining? There's a little bit of that like in between, and you know, that's kind of where I'm at right now, is like that in between phase. But also means that like the albums that could have gotten done, like this one in Wonderland with the money, it's like, look, we gotta put that on pause until
we get this, you know, I mean? Get this money on.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, that's just how it is. Like, if there was a label, they would have already written us off. You know what I mean? Because it's such a small amount that
they might have enjoyed it because they can recoup quick.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, is that like, if you're a label, and this is just in general, mm-hmm. you want to work with artists who have a strategic plan.
Right.
You know, but because I come from you know, the nonprofit and youth development, a more professional kind of side of things, right. and then I've kind of been in music also. I've been writing lyrics since I was 12 years old, so that's always been a part of me, but because I'm not a full-time musician and I don't spend all my creative energy, you know what I mean, doing that, I've learned the business side of this really well so that I can do the music side without somebody else telling me what I can or can't do and all of that stuff. So that's kind of just where I am with the album. I started GoFundMe because I think that the storytelling on this album has been elevated.
Right.
And as much as Sacramento has welcomed me into their community and helped me feel like, you know, I belong here and this is a place I can call home, which has been amazing. I actually have a home.
You do.
You know what I mean? And people don't get to hear those stories, right, that often. So this album is all about that. Right. It's about growing up in a city, not knowing what life is beyond that, right? So the beyond that is this idea of Wonderland.
Okay, so we'll talk about that, but let's see, what got you into hip-hop generally? What got you into hip-hop?
I mean, so my grandmother was a minister in the church, and you know, she was nursing like around the clock and she was doing her thing. So my older sisters were big into 90s R&B and hip hop music and like, you name it, like SWV and Mariah Carey and Mary J. Blige and the Fugees. And that was like my first like introduction into what this was.
Like an R&B-ish type of...
Yeah, just your very kind of soulful vibe. And, you know, our family's Jamaican. So, you know, pushing nice. Positivity and being conscious is always one of those things that has always been important to us.
Okay.
Right? Bob Marley was a big record that we would hear around the house. So for me, it was... I was a writer first. You know, I was writing short stories, and like whenever you gave me a creative writing assignment, like that was my thing. I broke my leg in second grade, so I was like homeschooled for like a year. My teacher would come every day after school, give me the lesson. So I was constantly reading, constantly in my imagination. But I remember I started like writing my first rhyme for a talent show in sixth grade.
Okay.
I was 12 years old and my friends were rapping and I was like, how do you do that? And what I found was that they were taking their favorite kind of songs and they would find like an instrumental somewhere and you could go to the store, you could buy instrumental CDs.
Those back in the days.
Right. It's not the case now. So they would then rewrite their favorite artists' like songs and like put their names into those raps or put places where they grew up into their, into, you know, the raps of their favorite artists and stuff. I'm like, okay, cool. I think I can do that. But I took it a step further. I was like, I'm just going to write a verse that I think could be competitive with their verses. Like if every song has three verses, I want to be the fourth verse on that song, you know? So then that's how I started writing and kind of mimicking my favorite artists and learning a whole bunch of different styles. And when you study the way that I was studying as a reader and as a writer, I was a fast learner for that kind of stuff. So my older brother was a poet and he won $500 in a competition at the library back home.
Oh, so you do have a poet in your family. Or
yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And he was writing poetry for other people's girlfriends.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
That's lucrative business.
It was his hustle. That's exactly what it was. It was his hustle. So I was like, bro, like you was sucker for that. But I respect it.
Yeah.
The thing is that he got outed because he would sign, like they were handwritten poems. So, you know, people, the girls would like match them up. You know what I mean?
They caught them in the act.
Yeah. And they were like anonymous. Wait, this is my poem's anonymous too. Are we talking to the same guy? Like it was a whole thing. So he got outed for it. And then he got encouraged to enter this contest. He won money. I was like, oh, like there's like real like money behind that. I was like, that's pretty cool. I wonder if I can put together an album, you know? So I started just like writing and I had my, in my notebook, you know, the little black and white composition, you know what I mean? So I just would, song number one, verse one, you know, and I would go through and at an early age, I learned about like song structure and different rhyming patterns because we were studying poetry in school and I was introduced to the Deaf Poetry Jam. So I could see how certain things were like coming together, but I was still like struggling to find my voice early on. But that was kind of the start, man. It was, you know, really a lot of like taking in all these different influences from right here in my home to, you know, going to school and seeing my friends do it, to hearing it on the radio and being introduced to a lot of different forms and flavors. So that was kind of my start in it.
So did any of your albums were made while you were in Boston, or was all your albums made when you made it, when you moved here in what, 2011 to Sacramento?
My first album was recorded the summer of 2010. And my first year with City Air, met this kid. His name was Zach Gerge. He served with me in that corps. He had his home studio, but we only kind of like heard about it towards the end of the year.
Okay.
I was like, bro, like, how come you didn't tell me? I would have like hit you up. And it's because he was like shy and a little nervous because he was still learning. And I was like, bro, like all I need is an opportunity in a couple weeks. And if you want to learn using my stuff, let's go.
Right.
You know, I had maybe like 68 songs from the time I was 12 through like 18, you know what I mean? Because I was just writing all the time. I had a whole bunch of like free verses and stuff like that. But I had like 68 songs that were like arranged and ready. And I was like, bro, like I can narrow this down to what I think is the best, maybe like, you know, 12, 16, and it ended up being like 16 tracks. If we can get it done at your house, like I am quick because these songs I've been holding on to for years.
Right.
You know, first studio session, it, probably 4 hours. I got like 7 or 8 tracks done and it was like too fast for him. and I love Zach. And he was like, oh man, like we need to like slow down. And I was like, I'm good. Like, I can keep going. Like, he's like, one, I don't have the time. But two, like, I think that if we slow down a little bit, we could take a little bit closer look at some of these vocals and how everything is coming out. And he knew more about the recording process because he was behind the boards.
Okay.
But I didn't know anything. Right.
Right.
I'm just a rapper. I'm coming in. I've seen my friends rap. I've written raps for other people. I've been in the studio with other people.
Right.
I've seen them do it, but I didn't understand what was happening on computer screens.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know any of that. So I recorded my first album in 2 weeks and I was like, bro, it's fine. We don't have to mix everything right now. I've waited forever to even get this opportunity. I'd love to just like sit with you while you mix it and we'll go through it. And then 1 month turns to two and two turns to four. And, you know, we're looking up, I think it's like 6 months in. And I'm like, hey man, just like want to check in to see, you know, what we can do, you know, to kind of push the album forward. And his computer crashed. He didn't know how to tell me that his computer crashed.
Oh, he's been holding it up.
And he was just like, bro, like, I think we lost everything. And I was like, cool. Like, I can come in and re-record. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, but now I need a new computer. It's a couple thousand dollars for a Mac. You know, at the time, I was like, hit me when you're ready. And he just never got it back together. You know what I mean? Like, He did eventually, but by the time I moved out here to Sacramento, like, his stuff wasn't all the way together yet. So it's cool. I told him, like, bro, I'm gonna take it out to Sacramento, and if I end up staying out there, I'll just re-record out there. I'm gonna find it. And that's what happened, was that when I moved out here, I knew I was out here to help start up an organization, but it wasn't a staff job just yet. It was my third AmeriCorps year. So you don't get the same kind of benefits. There's not a third educational award. There's not, like, you know what I mean? You're still on, like, food stamps. You're still on, we had these, like, transportation passes through RT to help us get around, which was dope because we weren't, like, making anything. You know what I mean? And it was when I got my first staff job that, you know, after about 8 months of building up this organization from the ground up, I then get my first staff job and I'm like, cool, you know, let me move out of this four-bedroom apartment with extra roommates. Let me find somewhere. Found a one-bedroom in Oak Park. And I was like, cool, this is going to work for me. You know, I bought a couch first. You know, I didn't have a bed yet, but I bought, you know, a couch. I bought a TV, hooked it up, cable, internet. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, stuff's starting to come together. I think the third or fourth month in, I was like, okay, cool. I got a little bit of extra, you know, money coming in every month. What can I do with it? I've always wanted to put this album together. You know, 16 tracks is a lot, but I also want to see, like, who's serious, who's not serious out here. And my boy hit me to Natho.
Okay.
You know Natho?
No.
OG Media. And he's one of the best videographers in Sacramento.
Nice.
But at the time, he was just getting started. Like, he was just getting started with his music stuff. He was a few steps in front of me, right? But he was just getting started with music, production. He hadn't released a couple projects yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
And he was just starting to touch the camera a little bit. And I was like, yo, Natho, like, you know, you said you got this mobile studio set up. What does that look like? Could you come to my house and, like, maybe record a quick mixtape with me? I have this idea. And then that's what
Marked at Birth
became.
Yo. Yiggy, yo, yo, yo. I'm showing growth with these words that are spoke. Tying together like a rope is another piece that I...
Okay.
I was like, bro, I got all these poems. I like to kind of add some light music behind some stuff, but I don't have beats. I don't have this stuff. Like, can you help me kind of arrange this and put this together? And he was like, yeah. And literally, I, like, you could 3 hours and 30 minutes later, that project was done.
Nice.
And it was wild because I didn't know what post-production meant at all. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But like, he was like, yo, like, go in, get some clean vocal takes, stuff that you have over tracks, you know, we'll do. And I remember like taking a few takes to like get stuff done. But you know, it was a comfortable process. It was an easy process and we got it all done. And he's like, word. So these tracks, I'm going to take them and I'm going to mix them. And I was like, what? Like, tell me more about the mixing process. What are you going to do? And he's like, well, there are things, and he played it back for me. He's like, you're breathing in front of stuff here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we're going to take out your breaths. We're going to make sure that your vocals, you know, aren't, you know, super loud or super quiet in certain areas. So we're going to adjust those things. So he started to really kind of break it down for me. And I was like, word, like, okay. Bet. I think, I don't remember what the number was, maybe 400, 450 or 500, something like that, you know, for that entire project.
Oh, okay.
But it got done for like an amount that I could afford. Okay. So then I was like, oh, now I have my first project.
Yeah.
Let me like share this, you know, with as many people as I can. And I think I like sold like 50 of those. I was like, oh, this was cool. This was nice. And I got to send a whole bunch of that back home. So then I was like, quickly, let's follow this up. Let's get into something that's a little bit more hip hop, because that's more what I do. I did the hip hop tribute tape,
okay,
you know, as they reminisce,
yeah, I saw that.
Over hip hop.
I repped the beam before it became a team. Grew up in JP, homie, know what I mean? I seen the teams and teens grow up and get cream. The dream, the scene, the mean streets of the beam. Let me come clean. I'm a maniac, lyrical brainiac.
And, you know, all basically what I was doing in middle school was the stuff that, you know, folks heard over that. You know, it was me mimicking my favorite rappers on their songs,
right,
to and creating what I thought would be an extension of their work. And it did it in honor of, you know, my favorite artists. And that was pretty dope. But it was a very similar process. And I think what I learned the second go around was I wanted it to sound a very kind of specific way.
Okay.
Right. Like I love this like classic kind of old school approach to recording, where when you heard an MC on a record, it sounded like the MC that you would hear live.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's like okay. There's not a lot of flash, not a lot of like, you're not auto-tuning everything. You know what I mean?
Not
like,
a lot of processing.
Like yeah. I can't sing, I can't do any of that stuff. So I want you to be able to recognize that it's me that did that on the record when you see me perform it live. And, you know, what I realized is that as dope as Nato was, you know, if I didn't have production of my own, then I couldn't really fully jump into this music thing as much as I wanted, right? I knew that I couldn't sell a project with other people's beats on it.
With
the tribute tape being what it was.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I was like, I have to kind of give this away for free. If people want to donate, cool. And I'll like use that money to put together the next thing.
Right. So basically this is the mixtape basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that's when I found Lewis.
Mm, okay.
You know, cause I was like, man, I'm looking for beats. Like, you know, I kind of posted on Facebook, and then my friend Guillermo, we did City Year back in Boston, and he was like, yo, my homie Lewis, I do slam poetry with him. He makes beats. You should holler at him.
Okay.
And then that's how we kind of linked up. And he sold me 9 beats for $25 a beat.
That's not bad.
You know, it was great.
Yeah. Not bad at all.
It was great. So for $225, then owned the production for all of Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
You know, the first one. And, you know, and then our relationship kind of grew from there. And now Lewis and I, we have over 35 songs together.
Nice.
It's probably closer to like 45.
I saw he was on The Guardian too.
Yeah. He's got a bunch of production credits throughout my catalog. And he's amazing and super talented as an artist himself. you know, and then when he gets on the mic, he's a beast, you know? And I think that that's what I was super excited about, was that he produced so much for me, but it was rare that he had a verse on some of my stuff. And I was like, bro, like, you're making these beats. You're like, you make beats for you.
Yeah, true.
So if you're making these beats that you would rap to, like, it just makes sense. And then when I told him, I was like, bro, like, you know, I'm thinking about the shift, and I'd love to get a project with you and me on it.
Right.
I was like, the leads for it. And that's what Coast to Coast 2 became. Mm-hmm. So now I think that's like 15 tracks solid. And it's like me and him kind of fronting the whole thing to put it together. And then with all the different features that we have coming in, they're kind of adding accents here and there to stuff. But it's primarily a me and Lewis collaboration, like it's been for most of my career.
Okay.
But that's kind of how, like, it's evolved from, like, where I started and then kind of getting more serious about it, and then, you know, where we're heading with it now.
Okay.
A bunch of the other projects I'm, like, super proud of and really excited about. I think about, like, Rough Draft and The Guardian as, you know, just these time-consuming kind of conceptual projects that, you know, it takes a lot to, like, sit, listen to, and then digest it all.
Right.
But I'm really proud of, you know, even just some of the smaller stuff too, like the walk-ups and alleyways project with somebody like Patty, because that was his first collaboration really with, like, other artists.
Hearing the calls, they clearing them all. Dead or fly or fear to fall. Watching sunsets on Southwest. I'm taking off, no fear at all. Civil unrest on fire escapes. Walk ups and alleyways. High rise with no escapes. I face myself face to face and ask myself, do you have what it takes to be great? Take a bite of my cheese, take a look around, watch him.
So was Patty just basically just doing recording and stuff?
He was 17.
Oh yeah, well yeah. No. Yeah. Shout out, like, to Pat Don.
Like, he was he sold me his first beat, which was on Rough Draft.
Okay.
This beat called the song called I Grow.
Okay.
And Try to Bearish But Didn't Know Where Seeds. Like, he produced that.
Nice.
And he was, you know, 17, I think, when he produced that. A couple years later, I was like, bro, like, you know, you're building your home studio, but you're trying to build this rep for yourself. Let me buy these three beats from you that I really like, and I want to flip this project, and I want to make it your project so that people get to hear you. When we threw it up on Bandcamp, we created this, like, joint kind of Bandcamp account,
right?
But all the money from that project went to Patty.
I don't know
how much we actually, so, like, wait, made
he,
off of that.
006?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure, I was like,
he went through some name changes. You know, as he evolved, got on his prints, you know.
Okay.
What I mean?
Okay.
But, you know, it was one of those things that he learned more and more about the business as I was learning about the business,
right?
You know, part of it. And that was a amazing partnership for the both of us, because it did all of those things. One, it gave me a quick little EP that I could kind of get out there and use, and the song Love and Light.
Yeah.
I got to perform that at Concerts in the Park right before my friend proposed to his then fiance.
Nice.
At the time. You know what I mean? Like, so there are some really special memories from that project. But I think the biggest thing was for Patty to recognize the value of his work.
Okay.
And now he's, like, built his home studio. Yes. And he's got a number of different clients. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, he's, like, really, like, doing his thing.
Good work.
But the business side is so important, and he's kind of got a good read on that now. So, you know, I think it's just dope. You know, my thing has always been, like, yo, I want to make music that's positive and uplifting, but then I want to be positive and uplifting with the people I got around me.
Okay.
You know, so if I could support or help elevate or amplify something that somebody else has got going on, then I'm absolutely all for that.
That concludes part one of our two-part interview. For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. Thank you.
So here's a question. So